Welcome to the Mama Bear Dares podcast. I'm Leslie.
I'm Tessie.
And we love and are encouraged by female podcasters giving helpful advice on motherhood. We're trying to add to this conversation by turning the spotlight onto moms who have inspired us by doing big and bold things, in addition to being great moms. We feature regular moms that you sit next to at PTA meetings or see shopping alongside you at Target. These moms, many of them have started nonprofits. They've come out of the other side of losing a loved one. They've carved out time to produce breathtaking art. And we ask them the questions that we've all been thinking. They're also women like us who haven't started international nonprofits or done seemingly amazing things that this world would be impressed by. But you know what? We are impressed by the little ripples of compassion that they are spreading out in their everyday lives. So that's what we focus on here on Mondays. We talk to amazing women just like you, who are doing these great things with their lives. And then on Wednesdays, we just get together and we chat as sisters and as friends, and we invite you along for the ride.
Yeah, we have so much fun, do we not?
Mm-hmm.
Even when the topics are a little heavy. And on Monday, we gave you a conversation with Aubrey Sampson about shame. So the topic was kind of heavy, but it really, again, it was just so incredible to share space with Aubrey and with each other. And we received some incredible feedback from you, our listeners, about Aubrey's episode, who have been through similar things as she has, or just those of you who maybe haven't been through sexual assault, but who kind of that theme of shame really resonated with you.
We did. The conversation that we were having with our listeners, it reminded me a little bit, Tessie, of a blog post that you wrote a few months ago. It was titled, "An Open Letter to My Daughter on the Precipice of Puberty," which I love the title. I love the word precipice.
I do too.
And I loved that post, and so did many of your readers. So I thought we could spend some time today talking about a few of just kind of the highlighted, some of my favorite points, really, or the points that people were talking about after you wrote that post. I think it actually would be a great opportunity to just further that discussion that we had with Aubrey, because you're right, it's a topic that resonates.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's give it a go.
So, Tessie, you started by saying that this article was really a reaction to a conversation that you had with Dayla about a few of her friends. So, Dayla's your only daughter, if listeners didn't already realize that. And she was telling you that she got to eat chips and chocolates from her friends' lunchboxes because her friends who brought these treats said that they were on a diet. And, you know, like, chips and chocolate is a pretty light topic until you weigh it down with right. something like the great big word diet and being 10 years
10.
Old. So,
yes.
Dayla, she's 10, so naturally it kind of, when you had this discussion with her, it poked your mama bear, I think, right? And it really encouraged you to sit down and think about this and write about it.
Exactly. You know, we, Dayla and I, thankfully at 10, I mean, we've always had a really open relationship with each other in terms of all of that, but she really was talking about how she wasn't hungry for a snack because she got all this junk food at lunch. So you're right, it started from this place of like really lighthearted conversation, but I just couldn't believe that it took that turn, mm-hmm. right? And I think when Dayla and I were talking about it, it really just brought up a lot of the stuff that I had dealt with from as far back as I can remember, honestly. All the body shame stuff that we talked about with Aubrey and that virtually every woman I know, you know, has mm-hmm. fought with at different points in my life. But it's gotten better for me. And as I said in the podcast with Aubrey a few years ago, it all came to kind of a head when I got the tattoo. And so I got that tattoo that says, "I am God's beloved" on my collarbone, just as a way to remind myself, to tell others. I kind of had it written so that people could read it when they look at me, you mm-hmm. know, so if at no point in their lives have they ever been told they're God's beloved. Like, you look at my collarbone and you'll have to say it to yourself at least once, right? And I also did it as an act of rebellion, really, like a way to end the conversation with the demons in my head once and for all. Like, hey guys, I'm claimed, demons, like, cast you out forever, right?
Up your nose with the rubber hose, demons.
Exactly. So, I mean, it reminded me of all of this. Like, once we were having the conversation, and then, of course, you try to go to bed, but all of this kind of swirls in your head. So the next morning, woke up at 4:30 a.m. and started tap, tap, tapping on the keyboard, you know?
Yeah. I think if we all kind of took pause and started tap, tap, tapping on that keyboard, we'd all come up with something. For me, body image, it's never been a big thing for me, but I definitely have dealt kind of with shame and with general insecurities. I mean, probably in ways that I'm not ready to talk about here on this podcast. But I do remember, and I think everyone has these images or memories kind of burned into their mind. As a kid, I remember being teased for having really big eyes, which it's crazy. And I remember trying to use eyeliner to make them smaller. You know, I didn't love my freckles. I was kind of ashamed by this gap in my front teeth. And what Aubrey made me realize in this last conversation was that these were shameful to me and that they made me feel like I was not enough. I love how she kind of gives this definition of not being enough. So I was either not, you know, tan enough with my pale skin and my freckles, or I wasn't put together enough. So I think that these things do, they pop up every once in a while. But it now, my shame comes from other life circumstances and choices that were made. But it's certainly, this sort of body shaming is obviously a huge topic. I'm certainly not immune to it. And I have a daughter too.
Right. I mean, and I think that's just it. I am the same way. It's no longer debilitating. All of those, it started as a body shaming thing, obviously, when Dayla was talking about a diet, but it became so much more when I kind of set out to write this letter to Dayla that, you know, I hope that one day she'll read. But as I was writing, like many of the things that I write about, or if I'm kind of, you know, writing to somebody, it really ended up becoming a reflection in all I've kind of learned in my, you know, relatively short life about what it means to be a woman in America, what it means to be a wife and a mom. So it went from body shaming and just kind of took off from there. Like, the joys and triumphs, all of it kind of came pouring out, because there is absolutely some really painful things that come with being a woman, but there are also really remarkably beautiful things too. And I just wanted to make sure Dayla is aware of both of them, I guess, you know?
So true. And I love that you're addressing Dayla, and that really you're addressing all of us who have daughters, all of our nieces. You know, I think most people, I can't think of a person who wouldn't be able to resonate or learn from your post. So let's get into it. You talk about how you didn't really ever believe you wanted to have a girl.
Right.
And at the time you had Dayla, Tristan was a three-year-old. But you kind of had yourself convinced that you were just going to have boys, and that you were going to be a boy mom, and that you almost preferred it that way. Why? Why was that?
You were probably not the same way. But, I mean, I just, you know, let's be real here. I was 24 when I had Dayla, 23, something like that. So just a little young pup, you know, and I was still so engulfed with how hard it was to be a woman in many ways at that age. And I kind of naively thought that it would just be super easy to raise a white male. And in a lot of ways it is. It's the easiest of any of the variations of my kids, right? But a female, it just, the idea of it overwhelmed me. I felt like I didn't even know how to be a woman myself. So how in the world was I going to raise like a confident woman when I just didn't feel that way about me, right? I mean, did you feel this way before bringing home Sintayu?
Yes and no. I mean, obviously, I'm kind of privy to the unique challenges of being female, but I love what it means to walk through this world in this body. I actually remember one of my best friends growing up telling me, I think we were both like 8 years old, we were in the back of our church, just like chatting on a Sunday morning. And she confided in me that she wanted to be a boy when she grew up. Now, clearly she was struggling with some gender identity even then. Mm-hmm. But my response, I remember just thinking how awful that would be. So I, you know, the human species kind of mystifies me in some ways, but I've always loved being female and was excited to share that gift with my daughter. Having said that, you and I, obviously, we talk a lot about understanding how the world evaluates our daughters on their physical appearance. And we experience this daily as adult women as well. But I think in your blog, it was obvious that this troubles you, and you almost seem to, I don't know, just to almost just be desperate to make sure that Dayla knows that that's not all she has to offer. And that's not what she has to offer, even.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, Dayla is beautiful, you know, and I feel totally comfortable saying this because she looks mostly like her dad's sister.
She does, but you can say that she looks just like you and she's beautiful. Come on, sister.
It's true, but she actually does look like Kate, who we've had on the podcast before, so it's totally fine. But she is, you know, and of course, on the one hand, it pleases me to hear people talk about her beauty because the ego in me is like, yep, I made that, you guys. You're welcome. But as a woman, you know that when you're constantly receiving these messages, it just does something inside of you. And it makes you start to believe that's all you offer the world. Mm-hmm. Because, like you said, we experience this as adults where, you know, the only comments coming in some days are about your physical appearance. Mm-hmm. And so how can you not, right?
Right.
And I am desperate to make sure Dayla remembers that, like, she's actually a really great artist, you know? Our house is littered with things she's done on a whim, like toothbrush holders made out of Kleenex boxes, decorated with duct tape, you know? I just threw one away because it was disgusting. But, I mean, I think that line is so hard to find. Yes, she's physically beautiful, and I want her to know and to feel beautiful and to experience all that comes with knowing that knowingness. But she also creates beauty all the time, and she's really funny and she's kind and she's hardworking. And so that desperation is really just to remind her that those are the things she should nurture, work on, and cultivate. You know, those are the things she should boldly offer the world, not her physical body.
Yeah, that is, I think, everyone's ears had to have just perked up because it's like, how do we do that? You know, mm-hmm. I think about Sentayu and she's stunning and there's no denying that, but like, she's also just so funny and so smart. Yeah. And she just is such a helper. You know, I don't know. I just, when people are commenting on her physical appearance and her beauty, I want to be like, yes, she is, but you should hear her tell a story. Like, this
yes,
girl
so
is
true.
So funny. And so, yeah, it's just hard. I do think that it's really important when the world says you're beautiful, that our daughters hear us and other women saying, yes, and you're also kind of mm-hmm. fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. Our relationship with them is going to be that sort of main relationship that kind of sets the tone for their whole experience as women. And we can't always control what their friends say or do, but we can control ourselves and how we respond to words and actions. And there is so much power to be had in that.
Absolutely. We've talked often on the podcast about how we as women talk about ourselves will become the internal voice of our daughters or our nieces. Mm-hmm. And clearly, Leslie, you and I believe it's so important that they hear us talking about our own strengths outside of physical beauty. I mean, that said, it's extremely important that they hear us talk about feeling beautiful and feeling strong, but it's also important that they hear us say things like, I worked really hard today and I wrote something that I'm really proud of, or, you know, your equivalent listener, like, yes, you have an equivalent, say that out loud.
Absolutely. I think just those external remarks about ourselves become their internal dialogue. I mean, that is powerful. Yeah. It's scary, but it's also
scary.
A little scary, but it's really empowering. And it feels good to know that even though so much of our parenting is out of our control, we do have the power to affect how our kids see themselves. Another thing you do, Tessie, in this blog post is you turn the idea of girls being dramatic on its head. I hear my boys saying this a lot, like, oh, girls, there's so much drama, or, oh, she's one of the drama girls. I stay away from her. And these sayings start really early.
I mean, the reality is my boys have just as much drama. If I could record their conversations and play them back to them, they would see that they are equally dramatic. But instead of saying, oh, boys are too, in the blog post, mm-hmm, I wanted to just make sure Dayla knew that drama wasn't all that bad, mm-hmm, you know? I mean, I say that because when I write, or, you know, when our friends are creating art, we're bringing out all the dramatic bits of life, and we're exposing those, right? Mm-hmm. We're embracing the drama. Same really when we're podcasting, if we're totally honest. We don't talk to our guests about what they ate that day. We talk about what changed them, what they've learned. All these are really embracing the drama of the years of their life, you know, not mm-hmm. the monotony, but the drama. And there's mm-hmm. nothing wrong with that. Beautiful art is highly dramatic. So I just wanted Dayla to make sure she keeps the drama, but keeps it in her art and in her storytelling, and that she leaves kind of the stupid drama that the boys tease girls about, I guess. And that can, when we're being, you know, let's be real, that can happen sometimes between girls and women. Leave that. Just leave that right alone, and then keep the drama that makes life just really beautiful.
You're absolutely right, Tessie. When you look at a painting that takes your breath away, ugh, I mean, that's drama.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that you're right. Like, you can kind of turn that idea on its head. And I appreciated that you specified that, and just the idea of keeping it out of the personal sphere, and making it a positive thing without allowing others really to minimize it and yeah. dwell on it and poke at it, you know, as a negative.
Yeah. I think this is an area that we can for sure engage the mama bears. You know, if I'm feeling something because of a girlfriend, I don't need to feed the dramatics. Mm-hmm. I try to teach Dayla the words to use when talking about my feelings. Like, I can say, you know, my friend really hurt my feelings. We'll get past it because I love her. We're good friends. But I'm just kind of sad right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to figure out how we can avoid this in the future. You know, something just super basic, instead of like, oh, so-and-so's doing it again. He or she always does this, and they know it pisses me off, so obviously they're doing it just, you know, instead of amping up the drama for those situations, just being very real with feelings so that they can kind of mirror that. Oh, my mom's just being practical. She's acknowledging her feelings, figuring out how to avoid it in the future, you know? Mm-hmm. It's just super important because I love drama and storytelling. I think it's a gift when, you know, really good storytellers or comedians, you know, they're playing up the drama. So it's mm-hmm. like, if someone tells you your whole life to lose the drama, then part of that becomes deadened, right? And I don't want her to deaden that part. I only want her to deaden the part that would, like, make sweeping statements about another human.
Right. That's a really, really important difference. One of the quotes that I saw being posted from your post was this, and I'm going to just read it here. I spent more years than I care to admit using my body in transactional ways because I didn't realize that my body was mine, that I didn't have to dress it up or starve it, expose it, or offer it up. In the last handful of years, I've learned to own my body. I work out when I want to because I feel like a badass, not because I'm worried I'll change my shape if I don't. I eat what makes me feel good and indulge in vegan chocolate whenever it's offered to me. I do this because whenever that small voice in my head repeats the language of our culture, I offer the language of love as rebuttal. So tell me about that.
Well, you know, we talked about it a little bit in the beginning, but when I was younger, I knew how to use my body depending on the situation. I mean, I still do. You know, I still do. I just don't do it. But it was never explicitly talked to me. You know, I had no tutor, like no female tutor that said, mm-hmm. lean your hips this way and you'll get that. Mm. But you're like me. We're observers of the world, right? And so I noticed people's reactions if I tilted this or lifted that. There were years when I thought more about how I was going to prop my physical body in an interview, a meeting, a class, or what have you, than I thought about what I was going to offer in the discussions within those spaces, which I don't ever want Dayla to do. And I can't be alone, right?
I mean, right. No, absolutely not. And I often think, and I still do this, like my outfit is my crutch. It's my mm-hmm. physical presentation to the world so mm-hmm. that, you know, that matters more than what I might have to say. That reminds me, just this whole conversation reminds me of a teacher kind of slash mentor that I had in high school. And so she was someone who experienced these things and then put language to them. Like you were saying, you know, a lot of this is about saying these things out loud, processing arguments with friends in a healthy way so that your kids can see it. You don't actually have to do that. You're processing it in your mind. But as a teachable moment for parents, we say these things out loud. So this right. teacher told me that she was once in a job interview and the interviewer was very obviously staring at her breasts as she spoke. Mm-hmm. And she was understandably upset, but she was not rattled. And she said that when she gave her answers to any of his questions, she stared at his bald head. In an effort to make him feel uncomfortable also. Yeah. And so I think back to that just as this example of how not only kind of coming in with a body, but also responding and then telling the story to the people sitting at your feet kind of thing. So we're aware of these things, you know, you're aware of how you move your hips or whatever, mm-hmm. good or bad, whether it's to our advantage or disadvantage. But I love just having the conversation about it and having those role models of you know, and we can be those role models now. We're right. in the position to just observe the behavior, call it out, turn it on its head, and then share the story.
Yeah. What an incredible mentor you had. I mean, that's awesome that she shared that story at a younger age, you know, especially because I feel there is so much pressure on us as moms, but we don't realize the power we also yield as aunties, mm-hmm. as women in the workforce, as mm-hmm. women at Target. You know, I mean, we yield incredible power for those moments too. And I think that's awesome that she chose to share that with you. And let's be real, I'm not naive. Dayla is equally observant about the world. She's mm-hmm. constantly telling me things that she's observed that really, like, she had to have stepped back and watched it all play out.
Right.
So she'll learn these things too. She'll learn how to move her hips or to dress to get what she wants because the world teaches us these things, right? Mm-hmm. And she may have what I like to refer to as lost years, where she spends too much brain space thinking of these things. But my hope by calling it out and by writing this is really just to start the conversation when she's young and continue it as she gets older so that the time she thinks about her physical body is far less than everything else, mm-hmm. you know? I'm a fitness professional, so clearly I believe in the power of the physical body too, and I don't believe there's anything wrong with, like, wanting to dress nice for an interview. Like, that's not what this is about, right? Mm-hmm. But I want her to think about her physical body in the way that she connects it to her spiritual body, her mind, her emotional, you know. I want her to hook into and access the power that comes from moving her body in the way that I love to do it, in that mm-hmm. fitness space, you know, running, walking, whatever, just being really strong and healthy.
Absolutely. And we don't want, you know, we don't need to be ashamed about our bodies. Yeah. We don't want that. It's okay to feel beautiful and to want to feel sexy. You know, it's okay to embrace that femininity that we have. I think what we're trying to say is just don't overthink it, right? Yeah. Like, learn what makes you feel your best, do that, and then leave the rest to someone else. extend that part in the essay when you're talking about sex as well. You actually right. talk a bit about what we've discussed in our horizontal tango episode.
I like how you got close to the mic. No one is at your house, and you still were like, I need to secretly tell you about the horizontal tango.
Horizontal tango. Yeah, I mean, you could basically, I recall that you closed the topic with have orgasms, don't fake them, have real ones, and make sure you're with someone who will learn how to give them to you and will wait for it. This doesn't feel like your average sex advice coming from parents, but you included it. And you hope that Dayla reads this and that right. one day she will have orgasms. Right?
Absolutely. I mean, I hope I can say this to her face at some point, too. Maybe I just slide the post, print it out to her. I don't know. But, maybe this is just me. But when I first started having sex, I had no idea that I should kind of demand orgasms, too. I had no idea. Of course, we were both young and had no real idea what we were doing. And of course, there are some aspects of like my low self-esteem and my shame, believing I didn't deserve an orgasm for doing what I was doing, like hashtag Christianity. There was like all of this was involved, I totally get that all that's involved. But the truth is that I was with someone I loved very much, and he was desperate to please me as well. So I want Dayla to know that if she's in that same scenario, which I hope she is, that she just needs to speak up, that she is, of course, worthy of an orgasm every time she has sex. And I kind of, as I was writing, so much of the post is about what our culture says versus what I want her to know, Mm-hmm. And I think that, the topic of sex and orgasms is just another way our culture reveals its patriarchy. Because the female orgasm feels very unknown and exotic and undiscoverable in our cultural conversations. Plus, as women, our culture tells us we're supposed to be about serving everyone else's needs before our own. So I feel like there are probably millions of women having sex without orgasm because we've had so much of these cultural messages over the times of our lives, right? And I just don't want my daughter or me, honestly, to be one of them. Even though, of course, sex can be beautiful and wonderful and feel good without an orgasm, I still think we as women need a little bedroom revolution almost. And we need to make sure we're telling our partners how they can give us one. So that was my way of, giving Dayla that information, something it's taken me, 30 years to learn.
Yeah. And I'd be curious, I wonder, do we need a bedroom revolution?
Right.
I'm curious, listeners, are you going to stage your own bedroom revolution?
We should just be to your partner, hey, the podcast I listened to told me I need to stage a bedroom revolution. Let's go have a tutorial.
I mean, literally in Liberia, Lema Gwobi writes about it in her book, Mighty Be Our Powers, I think it's called. This group of women revolutionaries withhold sex in order to squash a terrible dictator.
Can we do that in America? Thing. This feels kind of important currently.
You'll have to read up on how that all played out. But, it's a powerful thing. And you're right. It can be, without, politicizing it, I guess. Mm-hmm. It's something to consider, What are you yielding in the bedroom? What does that say about your general, not only just your relationship to your partner, but also just your own self-love kind of, mm-hmm. It's a big topic. I'm glad you wrote about it and were willing to speak about it here too. And I think it's a good thing to think about, what are we communicating in the bedroom?
Yeah. What would you tell Sintayu about it?
I don't know. I mean, She's so young. I don't know. I haven't thought
about
it.
Yeah, that's hard.
I just haven't. Yeah. For sure, like, have orgasms.
Right.
For sure.
Right. But maybe that's the revolution, right? Has anyone explicitly ever told you to have an orgasm?
Well, not besides explicitly, me. But I think no one's saying don't have an orgasm. Or I'm not hearing that either.
Yeah, I feel like no one's saying, you're right, no one's saying either. But the messages of our culture are like, please people before mm-hmm. yourself.
Do, definitely.
You know, like, so that it naturally extends to the bedroom. Yes.
Yeah, I completely
right.
agree with you on that.
Right. And so I wonder if you do have to be explicit about orgasms, or if you could just train your daughters to know that they don't have to always please other people
yeah.
before themselves. You know, I do think right. there's room for interpretation rather than just explicitly saying, like, have you had your orgasm today?
Right.
You know, I mean, I think there's definitely different routes.
Can you imagine
around that?
I'm picturing, like, Sentayu wanting to call me in college and me being like, so have you had your orgasm?
I can't wait. Maybe I need to be that person for Sentayu.
But no, I think you're absolutely right. And I think that with young girls, like, that is, you hit the nail on the head, just talking about, like, are you only about pleasing others, or mm-hmm. what do you know what pleases you, and that you can have that conversation with children that are not ready for sex.
Yeah There you go, listeners, we just solved that. Just solved that national problem.
So Tessie, back to the blog post, you talk mm-hmm. a little bit about how Dayla can engage her voice, which we did an entire mini episode on, so we don't need to spend a lot of time on that. Check out episode 22. We called it Stop Interrupting Me, and we will link it in the show notes. And I love that episode, actually.
Yeah.
But you talk more about emotions, that we should definitely kind of encourage our daughters to embrace their emotions, and then we need to guide our daughters and how to do that, or nieces mm-hmm. Or special kids in your life. Right. We hear it all the time in a more derogatory sense, like, oh, she's so emotional, again, back to that drama, things
right.
like that. But you turn this on its head and you make it a good thing. So talk about that.
Well, I mean, clearly, because I cry almost every episode of this podcast, I believe being emotional is a good thing.
I actually, earlier, was like, is she crying? I can't quite tell. So anyway.
Nope, just still only on my first cup of coffee. Need the second one, or it always looks and sounds like I'm crying. Dayla gets this from me. Like, there are all kinds of signs pointing to the fact that she's going to cry really easily. Which, you know, again, I was ashamed of for a number of years. And it's why I wrote this part to her, right? Mm-hmm. But I want her heart to break when she sees a homeless person on the street. I want her heart to break when she hears of death. And I see now that instead of being ashamed about it, that when I get really emotional, it's just my heart telling me I need to explore that a little mm-hmm. further. You know, I cried for days the first time I went to Ethiopia and saw women and small children carrying the 45-pound water jugs on their heads for miles, only to retrieve dirty water to give to their families. And it's because I stopped and listened to those tears that I became such a clean, you know, such a huge mm-hmm. clean water advocate.
Mm-hmm.
So in the post, what I essentially was saying, like, you have a mama bear inside of you, and you'll know she's engaged when tears start to come out of your eyes or injustice keeps you up at night. Mm-hmm. So listen to that and then act.
Yeah, which sounds a lot like the impetus for this podcast, really.
Right, right.
Yeah, and I think, again, that kind of goes to knowing your children, like knowing them as individuals. I'm not a crier. This is something, like, I too stay up late at night. I get angry. I get numb. You know, I know the ways that I react to the world in positive emotional terms.
Right.
And I think just recognizing whatever that looks like in your
exactly.
daughter, and then embracing it and helping them through those feelings, it's crucial. I mean, we want mama bears in the making, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's such a good point you just made, that you know, not everyone's going to cry like I do, but those who love you, Leslie, know when you're in a highly emotional state, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's nothing wrong with that. Even, you know, so Sintayu knows and sees like you being emotional and then you saying, you know, you rage for good from that is awesome. And to know that like there are different ways of quote unquote being emotional as women. It doesn't have to look like your mom or your sister or your friend. And each way can really result in beautiful things happening from those emotions, you know? But I ended the post by reminding Dayla that even though all of these things are true and they often make being a woman hard, being a woman is actually really incredible too. You know, like, sister, our job is to sit in our house clothes, at least for me, you're dressed.
Christmas pajamas.
Christmas pajamas currently. And talk to each other and other really extraordinary women on Mondays. Like, this is our job and it is an incredible blessing. We say it all the time. There's just no shortage of women who are exemplifying love, compassion, and joy in beautiful ways. And I want Dayla, like I'm desperate for Dayla to embrace all facets of being a woman, the soft nurture, the fierce mama bear, all of it, you know, because for me, once I started doing that, life has just become infinitely beautiful.
Mm. Yeah. And better. Like it's just better when you're able to kind of take a moment and think about what being a woman means to you and the ways that we agree with our, you know, some of these things, the femininity, that's just part of who we are, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then when we can examine the ways that our culture tells us to be women that really aren't part of who we are or that we, you know, take issue with, that it is, it's a huge blessing. So I'm glad that you, really concisely talked about it in your blog post, which we'll be sure to link. And I'm glad that we were able to kind of have this conversation in response to Aubrey's interview about shame and about being a woman and about raising girls. So yeah, thanks for that. I know you have a dare, Tessie. Let's hear the dare.
Okay. So Mama Bears, today we just want to dare you to sit down and write a letter to your daughter, your niece, or even just your younger self. I can't believe how much healing was done for me while taking the time to write this post for Dayla. Even though it started as something I did for her as a reaction to something she'd experienced, it became something I did for me. Maybe you're like me and tend to be really hard on yourself for mistakes you've done in the past or choices you've made. Sitting down to write something like this exposes the reality that you probably did the best with the information you had at the time. And now we do better. Now that we know that our voices are our voices, that our bodies are our bodies, now that we know that we get to decide who we are, that we deserve a seat at the table in the room where it happens, that we deserve an orgasm with sex, now that we know, we can forgive ourselves for not knowing before. We dare you to step into the knowing and use your knowledge to become the fierce, engaged mama bear, unafraid to speak against injustice, and who moves the world a little further down the roads of love and compassion.
So, so, so great. I love that this conversation, that this blog post, all of this happened because of this great conversation you had with your daughter. About chips and chocolate. Like, she was able to come and tell you about this thing and that you have used this thing to not only help her and nurture her, but also the rest of us as well. So thanks for that, Tessie. You guys, what's your experience with your daughters, with raising girls, with your nieces, with shame, with yourself? Do we need a bedroom revolution? I'm dying to know what's going on. So follow us on social media. Find us on Facebook. Comment. Send us an email. Hit us up on Twitter, Snapchat, Instagram, all of those things. We love to keep this conversation dynamic. We love to involve all sorts of opinions and people. So find us there, and then we will see you back here on Monday. We've got a great interview, another great interview coming up.
So have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday.
See you Monday.